Well, this is Friday number what? Does anyone know? What is it? Huh? 12? This is the 12th time? 12th Friday service? Has anybody been here at all of them? And Jenna, anyone else been here at all of them? Yeah, a couple. Okay, we got 12-week badges for you. That'd be fun, but we don't. All right, we are finishing up our capital campaign, and we started this a few weeks back, guys, and we're going to wrap it up tonight. Just talking about an opportunity that God's given us and what it might look like for us to take that opportunity. And kind of where we've gone so far, we're calling it The Family's Growing, It's Time to Build. And we talked about the first week, just real briefly, we talked about, you know, our goals as a church, and there's different goals, and God asks us as a church to do different things, and he wants us to build each other up. He wants us to worship Him. He wants us to reach out to the community around us. He wants us to reach out to even beyond this community. You know, he wants us to share His word, share the gospel, and so there's all these different things that God asks us to do as a church, and one of them is at different times in our church history, you know, where God sets different things in front of us, and it seems like we're kind of in a unique position these days at Cedar Creek with all of the young families we have, and so just really thinking about how can we make the most of our young families, of our kids. We have lots and lots of kids here at church, and how can we make the most of that, and how can we kind of leverage that to reach out to the community, and just recognizing that young kids are something that draws people to church. When people have young kids, they're drawn in to church, and so just really recognizing that we have a real unique position here at Cedar Creek. We talked about that a couple weeks ago. Then the week after that, we talked about some details. What is it that we're actually thinking of doing? How is it that we think God might be asking us to take advantage of that position? And we laid out the plans for building an expansion here to the south. And there's a chance we have to put an addition on. Going to open up lots of space for our kids. We're going to be able to do a lot more fun things with our kid space here on this side. We're going to be able to expand the sanctuary here. Just seemed like a good thing for us to do, a good way to use our financial strength, the people that we have, the space God has given us to really use it well. We talked about that the second week of the capital campaign. Then last week we talked about some of the details of that. Everything costs money, and we know that everything that we do in this world, you build an expansion, it costs money. So we just talked about how we need to pay for this, and we're in such a great, strong financial position as a church because people give. But what we're asking for, part of this capital campaign is leading up to, we're asking people to give over and above what they normally give to the church to help us support to build this expansion. And we asked the question last week, why would you do that? I mean, what would lead you, you know, if you're giving already to the church, why would you give more? Why would you want to do that? And we just talked about we give money to what's important to us. And we talked about financial discipleship and how, you know, really using our money as an act of worship to the Lord, as a expression of our heart, of our priorities, is such a good, powerful thing, and how much it shapes us, and how much God uses that. And so we laid that out last week. If you missed any of these messages, you can go online and listen to them. I would encourage you to do so. Tonight, what we're going to do is talk about one more thing. We've kind of laid out so far, this is kind of, you know, big picture, what God's asking us to do. This is kind of where we're at as a church. These seem to be the opportunities that God has given us, all kind of big picture things. Then we talked about some real details, nuts and bolts. This is what we want to do. This is how we hope to pay for it. We've talked about what's happened. We've talked about kind of where we're at. We've talked about the things that we think that God is asking us to do. But tonight we're going to talk about recognizing that when you do something like this, and so often in the Christian life, God asks us to take a leap of faith. And that's what we're going to talk about here tonight. Taking a leap of faith. And as we live our life as individuals and as a church, there are times when God says to us, hey, I want you to do something where maybe you can't see exactly where you're going to land. Maybe you can't see exactly how this is going to turn out. You know, maybe you can't prepare everything and know for certain that everything is just going to happen this way and this way and this way. Instead, says God, I want you to do something. I want you to take a step, not knowing necessarily how this is all going to work out, where this is all going to go. Take the step because I'm asking you to, not because you can see the whole path. God asks us to do that as individuals. God asks us to do that as a church. And I forget which week it was. I think it might have been the very first week. We talked about this verse. It's Proverbs 21:31. It says, the horse is made ready for the day of battle, but victory rests with the Lord. And that's a verse that I like. I think about that verse a lot because it kind of lays out these two different roles or two different responsibilities whenever God is doing something, and or most of the time when God is doing something. And it lays out kind of, or it recognizes, this verse helps us to recognize that God has a part in what we do, and we have a part. God is going to do something. That there are certain things that only God can do. And here it says, victory rests with the Lord. In other words, the end result is something that God's going to do. That's God's role in the things that we do with him. Our role is to make the horse ready for the day of battle. In other words, there are things we have to do to get ready. So if there's a battle, God says, you know what? In a battle, all kinds of things can happen. And in a battle, there's danger. And in a battle, there's possibly pain. And so here's what I want you to do. I want you to get your horse ready. Get your armor on. You get all set. And then get up in the saddle and charge. And then as you're charging, I'm going to do something. And we're going to win because God says, I'm going to do something. And so this verse helps me to kind of recognize God asks me in my own individual life to do things, not knowing what the end is, but trusting that he knows what the end is. And that's that leap of faith. This kind of lays out God's role and my role. And the two are not interchangeable. In other words, we can't do God's part, and God's not going to do our part very often. God says, you do your part, and then I'll do something that only I can do. And what we're going to talk about tonight is that part that only God can do. Recognizing that so often, guys, we have to put ourselves in God's hands and he has to come through. We have to take a step not knowing, you know, maybe not having all our ducks in a row, maybe not knowing exactly how this is going to play out. We have to be willing to do that. And we see that often in the Bible. We see it often in our lives. And so I want to talk about that tonight. Talk about God's part in this whole thing of what we're doing. Because if we're going to take this step of faith, you know, building a building, it may seem like, oh gosh, it just happens all the time. Yeah, it does. But there's a real financial risk in something like this. There's a lot of money being spent, and we don't know for sure what the end result is going to be. You know, we're building this thing hoping that what it'll do is allow us to really raise our kids well and to draw in the community. We're really, really hoping that's going to happen, but we can't dictate that. You know, it's not like Field of Dreams, where if you build it, they will come. We don't have that. Has anybody seen that movie besides me? That's an old one. We don't have that exact knowing what's happening. We're hoping. We're desiring. We're saying, Lord, we want you to bless us as a church family. We want you to influence the world around us. But we don't know how that's going to look. We're stepping out into this knowing, hey, you know what, God, this costs a lot of money. You know, what we're looking at is $750,000, and we don't have $750,000. And so, God, you're going to have to do something to bring that money in. And so there's this leap of faith. There's this something that God has to do that nobody else can do. And we see that a lot, and I want to look at that a little bit tonight. And what we're going to do, there are lots and lots of stories in the Bible about that, lots and lots of times and places where that happens. I'd like to look at one tonight and just kind of walk through it a little bit here. And what we're going to look at is early on in the book of Joshua. This is a story that you're probably familiar with. It's the Battle of Jericho, where the Israelites came and they crossed the river into the Promised Land, and God did something. There was a city there, this big city, strong city, walled city that was ready for an invasion. This was a city that had, you know, was at a crossroads, and so it was a city that knew it was going to have wars, and so it was ready. It was a tough nut to crack, and God said, I want you guys to take this city, and they did, but how they did it is helpful for us, I think, because it kind of shows these two different parts. And so, and here in Joshua chapter 1, I'm going to read verses 5, 6, and part of 7. It says this: no one, this is God speaking to Joshua, no one will be able to stand against you as long as you live, for I will be with you as I was with Moses. I will not fail you or abandon you. And that's God's part. God says, this is something I'm going to do, Joshua. He'd told Joshua, Moses is dead. And if you know the story, Moses had took the people out of Egypt, but that was a long time ago. That was 40 years ago. They'd wandered around in the desert for 40 years, and now Moses is dead. And God is saying to Joshua, all right, Joshua, now I want you to go take the land. There's this whole beautiful country, but it's full of enemies, and you need to take all these people, this million ragtag bunch of folks who've been wandering around in the desert for 40 years. I want you to take them, cross the Jordan River, and go in there and take the land. And this is what God says to him: no one's going to be able to stand against you as long as you live. How does Joshua know that? How does he know that? Did God say, well, here's what I'm going to do. I'm just going to kind of, you know, send a tornado and everybody's going to be dead when you get there. He didn't say any of that. He just said, Joshua, no one's going to be able to stand against you. Why? For I will be with you as I was with Moses. I will not fail you or abandon you. And God says to Joshua, I'm going to do something that only I can do. And Joshua had to decide whether he believed it or not. But then he goes on. Be strong and courageous, for you are the one who will lead these people to possess all the land I swore to their ancestors I would give them. Be strong and very courageous. Be careful to obey all the instructions Moses gave you. Well, that's Joshua's part, isn't it? That's Joshua's part. Okay, you got to be strong and courageous, buddy, and you need to lead. Know what I'm saying. Be careful to obey all the instructions. There's something that Joshua has to do here. And so I like this story because we see right at the beginning what we said before. The horse is made ready for the day of battle, but victory rests with the Lord. God's saying to Joshua, there's what I want you to do. I have a mission for you. You need to take my people, my nation, his chosen people. I want you to take them. They've been in slavery. And they've just had 40 years of kind of this testing and refining, and they're ready to go now. And I want you to go and to conquer the land. And it's filled with enemies, and it's filled with giants. 40 years earlier, they'd gone in there and saw, and these people are huge. They're giants. The cities are walled, and they're strong. And oh my gosh, this is not going to be easy. And now God's saying to Joshua, no, it ain't going to be easy, but I'm going to be with you. Here's what I want you to do, and then just watch and see what I will do. And so let's look at that story a little bit, because see how it plays out. How is it that this kind of plays out, where there's Joshua's part, there's the Israelites' part, and then there's God's part, something that only God can do. And remember, what we're talking about today, what we're looking at, is God's part. That part only he can do. So I'm going to jump forward here to chapter 5 of Joshua, and we're just kind of going to kind of read this story a little bit and talk about it a little bit as we go. I'm going to start here in verse 6 of chapter 5. So it says, the Israelites had traveled in the wilderness for 40 years until all the men who were old enough to fight in battle when they left Egypt had died. For they had disobeyed the Lord, and the Lord vowed he would not let them enter the land he had sworn to give them, a land flowing with milk and honey. So Joshua circumcised their sons, those who had grown up to take their father's places, for they had not been circumcised on the way to the promised land. After all the males had been circumcised, they rested in the camp until they were healed. Then the Lord said to Joshua, Today I have rolled away the shame of your slavery in Egypt. So that place has been called Gilgal to this day. While the Israelites were camped at Gilgal on the plains of Jericho, they celebrated the Passover on the evening of the 14th day of the first month. The very next day they began to eat unleavened bread and roasted grain harvested from the land. No manna appeared on the day. They first ate the crops of the land, and it was never seen again. So from that time on, the Israelites ate the crops of Canaan. What do we see here? He's just kind of laying out and thinking, well, what's the big deal here? Here's the big deal. These people, if you know the story, God had taken them out of Egypt, and they'd come to the promised land, and they'd gone in and seen how hard it was, and they'd rebelled against God, and God said, all right, all you people who didn't go in, you're never going to see here. So they wandered around for 40 years in the desert until all those fighting men had died, and now it's 40 years later, and their sons, the next generation who has been wandering in the desert for 40 years, are coming back. And they're different people. They've seen God provide for them for 40 years. Manna had come down from heaven. Every morning they woke up and there was food falling from heaven. That's what manna was. It's amazing. You read the story. Every morning food fell out of the sky from heaven and they ate it. They'd seen this for 40 years. When there wasn't any water, Moses had hit a rock and water would gush out. God said, your sandals aren't going to wear out. God had done amazing things. These folks had been kind of getting ready. They'd been seeing God do things for a long time. And now they're here at this place, and they're willing to do something that their God asks them to do. They got circumcised when they were old, and we won't get into that, but it says they had to hang around until they were healed. I mean, I'm guessing that was not a whole lot of fun, and yet they did it because, you know what? God's asking us to do something, and we believe God. And then the manna stopped, and they're eating the food. All of this takes us to this, that these people were ready. These people were ready to take a leap of faith for God to do something. They were kind of in a unique position. They were really ready to see what God was going to do. God had brought them to a place where, okay, now it's time for the next step. Let's keep reading. In verse 14, I'll start reading in verse 13. It says, when Joshua was near the town of Jericho, he looked up and saw a man standing in front of him with a sword in hand. Joshua went up to him and demanded, are you a friend or foe? Neither one, he replied, I am the commander of the Lord's army. At this, Joshua fell with his face to the ground in reverence. I am at your command, Joshua said. What do you want your servant to do? Well, what do you see here? Well, there's been a lot that's happened already. We've seen that for 40 years, God's been getting him ready. But now, it's time to do something else. A lot has been done, but there's a lot of work yet to do. And so Joshua says, okay, we've come here, and you've taken care of us. What do you want me to do now? What do you want me to do next, Lord? You've prepared us. Here we are. What do you want us to do? And this is what he says, starting in chapter 6 here, verse 1. It says this, now, the gates of Jericho were tightly shut because the people were afraid of the Israelites. No one was allowed to go out or in. But the Lord said to Joshua, I have given you Jericho, its king, and all its strong warriors. You and your fighting men should march around the town once a day for 6 days. 7 priests will walk ahead of the ark, each carrying a ram's horn. On the 7th day, you are to march around the town 7 times with the priests blowing the horns. When you hear the priests give one long blast on the ram's horns, have all the people shout as loud as they can. Then the walls of the town will collapse and the people can charge straight up into the town. Okay. Joshua says, Lord, you've prepared us. We need to take this promised land. We're going to start with this town of Jericho. Here you are. You've come to meet us. What should we do? And God says, here's what I want you to do. I want you to go up to Jericho and march around it once, blowing the horns, and then go home. Then do that again the next day. March around the city once, blowing the horns, and then go home. Do that for 6 days. On the 7th day, I want you to go and march around the city 7 times, blow the horns, and shout. And then I'll tell you what to do next. What do we learn from this? Well, God was going to do something only he could do. This is God's part, and it may or may not have made sense to the people. I'm guessing it probably didn't. I don't know that it made a whole lot of sense militarily, you know. What's your plan? Well, we're going to march and blow, you know, once a day for 3 days, 6 days, and then we're going to do it seven times on the seventh day. God gave them a plan and said, this is what I want you to do. And the plan may or may not have made sense. But Joshua had said, Lord, how do you want us to do this? Tell me what you want to do, and this is what God said. So, what happened? The people did their part. They obeyed. In verse 11 here of chapter 6, so the ark of the Lord was carried around the town once that day, and then everyone returned to spend the night in camp. Moving on here, verse 14 says, on the second day, they again marched around the town once and returned to the camp. They followed this pattern for 6 days. On the seventh day, the Israelites got up at dawn and marched around the town as they had done before. But this time, they went around the town seven times. The seventh time around, the priests sounded the long blast on their horns. Joshua commanded the people, shout, for the Lord has given you the town. They obeyed. The people did their part. This is what God told them to do. So they did it. Whether it made a whole lot of sense to them or not, whether they could really see how this was going to work out, this is what God said. We know the goal. We're willing. We're ready. We're prepared. God, tell us what to do. God told them. Okay, that seems a little odd, but they did it. They did their part. They obeyed. And then God did his part. And it was miraculous. Verse 20, when the people heard the sound of the ram's horns, they shouted as loud as they could. Suddenly, the walls of Jericho collapsed, and the Israelites charged straight into the town and captured it. Now, think about this. This really happened. They marched around the town, blew the horns, and shouted, and all the walls fell down. That's what it says. It was absolutely miraculous. They couldn't do this. Their voices weren't so loud that their sound shook the walls and it fell down. God just did something that only God can do. God did his part. They made the horse ready for the day of battle. They asked God what to do. They obeyed. They did it. And then God did something that only he could do. And then the people kept moving forward. It's interesting that here in verse 27, so the Lord was with Joshua, and his reputation spread throughout the land. You know, that wasn't the end. Sometimes we think, oh gosh, God does this miraculous thing, and oh, wow, okay, that was really cool. Now let's just stay here and think about that. We're going to keep going. Joshua's reputation kept going because God had other things for them to do. So you see this story, and you read this story, and I think it's pretty easy for us to think sometimes, wow, that's really crazy. And sometimes, though, I think we think, you know, that only happens to people in the Bible, but it is not true. And guys, this is what is so exciting to me. This is why stuff like we're doing now is exciting to me, because it gives us a chance to see that that doesn't happen just then. You know why they saw a miracle? Do you know why they saw a miracle? Because they put themselves in a position where God had to come through. They took their life in their hand. They went and they did this thing, and they were standing in front of their enemy, the enemy that wanted to kill them. And God said, I'm going to do something miraculous. And they saw it happen because they just took him at his word and they stepped out in faith. They did it. They stepped out in faith. And we think sometimes, oh, that'd be so great. Well, it is. It is great. But we're not going to see it unless we step out in faith. We're not going to see God do miraculous things unless we step out in faith. And you know, we've seen that kind of stuff here at Cedar Creek. This is not the first time that we have here in this church had to step out in faith and see God do something. There have been leaps of faith over the years. I just want to kind of, you know, I've been around this church for a long time, and so I know some of these things, and I want to share them with you guys. In 1996, we were down on Second Avenue Church of probably, oh, I don't know, 50 people or so, maybe a few more, and just really felt Dave, the other pastor there, just felt that, you know, we needed to shake things up, to do something different. And so I had been appointed a pastor in 1993, and in 1996, I was put on staff here at the church. And that may not seem like a big deal, except we didn't have any money. And so what Dave did is he went to the saints and he said, you know what? What we'd like to do is raise 6 months of salary for Rob. Can people give 6 months of salary? We raised that half a year, Rob will quit his job, go on staff with 6 months of salary, hoping that after that 6 months, there'll be enough money coming in to keep him on. Well, that's a leap of faith for all kinds of people. Leap of faith for the church. We're taking the responsibility of this guy. Leap of faith for Sue and I. We're going to quit my job as a lawyer and go on here at church with only 6 months worth of financial security. That's a leap of faith. But you know what happened at the end of 6 months? Money was there. And we kept going. And that was, what, 1996? That was 21 years ago. Been doing it ever since. But this church put itself in a situation where, God, you're going to have to do something. We felt like this is what you're asking us to do, so we'll do it. A couple years later, in 1998, we were still a small church, but just really felt like God was asking us to grow. A church of probably, I don't know, 60, 70 people maybe at that time. We owned an old building down on 2nd Avenue. And we just felt like we're meeting in the basement. Just felt like, you know what, if we're never going to have much of an impact here with this building. We need to get out, get more exposure, just kind of modernize this up a little bit. So we started looking around. We found this building, only it was over there. Whoops. Couple hundred yards, it was over there. It was a waterbed showroom. It had been bought by the state. And so the state owned it. We went to the state and said, can we lease this building? And they said, sure, you can lease it for 3 years, and then we're going to bulldoze it because the road is coming through. So we sold our building on 2nd Avenue. Sold it. We got $50,000 for it as a church. Signed a lease with the state, spent the entire $50,000 renovating this building. When we got it, there was one wall in it, this wall here, right down the middle. Everything else was just big, bare spaces. We spent our whole $50,000, sold our one asset, took the $50,000, renovated this building. Had a sign out front, said Cedar Creek Community Church, just started to do worship here. Knowing, gosh, we feel, God, this is what you're asking us to do. You know, we want to win souls, and we're just not. It just seemed like we were down in a place where it just wasn't going to happen, and we just needed to get more exposure. We needed to have a better place to kind of reach out to this community, to the world we were living in. And God just kept pushing us, you know, you need to get out. But it was so... it was so scary. I can remember as we were renovating this, this stage was built, but there was no carpeting, and I was here, and I was just walking around thinking, God, if people don't come, we're in trouble. If something, I mean, we've spent all our money, and in three years, this is all going to get bulldozed. I have no idea what's going to happen 3 years from now, God. And I was just pacing back and forth. Lord, you got to do something. We're taking a risk. But we did it. We spent our money. We put all of our money in here. And you know what happened? People started to come. And people started to get saved. And this church went from a church of maybe 60, 70 people to a church of 120, 130. It's not numbers that make a difference, except that that's one of the things God asked us to do. And every one of those souls was someone that God wanted to touch. And he began to use us in really neat ways. But we saw it happen because we were willing to take a step of faith. We're going to have to just, we don't know what the future is going to hold. In fact, it looks like in 3 years we're going to be out on the street with nothing. But God, we're willing to just put ourselves in your hands. See what you can do. That happened in 1998. We did that. About that time, right around 2000, we thought, you know what, we need to get down on campus and really have an impact on campus. So we started The Edge in 2000. And... you know, at first it was just meeting and Bible studies and no big deal, but then we really thought we need to have a presence on campus. How can we do that? How can we get on there and really have an impact on campus? And so we just, a couple people, just had a heart to do it, and we thought, let's do it. Let's start a student organization. Let's go down. We'll start sharing the gospel on campus. We'll start inviting people to a Friday night service at the Technical College. We had to rent the tech school we rented the technical school auditorium. I think it was like $200 a week or something like that. It was $200 a week, $800 a month. Went into that with no budget, and the church didn't have money to pay for it. And honestly, I'm not kidding when I say to this day, I don't know how we paid for it. But every month, we wrote a check to the technical school for $800. Kept doing it for years. and years and years. And you know what happened? People started to come. And so many of you were impacted in the edge. And so many young men and women came and got saved and their lives were transformed. And you met each other. I was looking at Matt and Brianna thinking, man, I remember when you guys were freshmen and I got a baby. Just like God does amazing things because we stepped out in faith. We didn't know how we were going to pay for it. We didn't. What are we doing on campus? I was 35, 40 years old at that time. I don't have any idea what's going on campus, but we just felt God asking us to do it. So let's do it. Let's step out and see what happens. And God blesses and people come and he takes care of things. He does what only he can do. We saw it happen with the edge. We're starting to get to the end of our 3 years. And in 2001, we thought, you know what, Lord, the state's going to bulldoze this building. It was still over there. You know, we got to thinking, why don't we just buy this thing? Where are we going to put it? Well, let's buy some land. Where's some land? Well, I don't know. Let's look. And so we just started to kind of look around. God, what would you have us do? And this is the craziest story. We were just looking to think, Lord, what can you do? Let's just not take anything off the table. And so we went to the state and said, you know what? Would you be willing to sell us this building? They said, sure. We got to bulldoze it anyhow. If you want it, you can have it, but you got to move it. So we got a builder to come, or a guy to come in, and I said, I don't think we can move it. He said, I can move anything I want. And he said, so we said, all right. So, but we got to have a place to put it. So we started looking around, and this land was kind of half for sale, and I wish I had time to tell you this story, but this little crazy con man got involved, and NASCAR got involved, and we ended up buying 6 acres here. The entire subdivision plan was changed, and I can't even begin to tell you all the crazy, crazy things that happened. And this guy then disappeared, this little con man, right at the very end disappeared. And I think he was either an angel or a crook. And he's either back in heaven or in jail. I don't know. He's one of those two places. But this land, they redid this whole subdivision. This was supposed to be condominiums right here. They totally revamped the whole thing, and there was 6 acres here. And we bought it, and the entire purchase price got donated to the church. So we got 6 acres, the building, and it moved, didn't cost us a dime. How in the world does that happen? I'll tell you how God does things that only he can do. But you see him happen when you say, Lord, we're willing. We wouldn't have seen that happen if we wouldn't have sold our building down on 2nd Avenue and spent every dime we had renovating this place. But it put us in a situation where God had to do something. And if God doesn't come through, we're out on the street. But God says, you know what, I'll do things that you can't do. And he did. And we saw it. And the plan didn't make sense often. But God comes through. We've seen these things happen. It just keeps going. In 2004, we were growing as a church. Doug Markowski was a pastor. We thought, you know what? Let's put him on staff. Well, same kind of thing. He was a school teacher, but we just went to the saints and said, this is what we'd like to do. We just think that it'd be good to get this guy on staff laboring in the gospel. So he did, and the church came through. And it was, again, it was one of those things that how are we going to pay for this? Well, let's, you know, we don't just make foolish decisions. We plan as well as we can, but then we just say, Lord, you're going to have to do something that only you can do. And he did. And in 2005, it was good that we did that. It was good that we put Doug on staff because the next year, Dave Lenander, the pastor that had been here forever, went to Berlin, Germany. That there was a church there that had been planted that was really struggling, and just out of the blue, Dave was asked to go over there, and so we did. And that was a huge leap of faith for Dave and Sandy. They were just beginning to have grandkids, and they moved to Germany for 3 years. So they left. Their entire life was in upheaval, going to help pastor a church that they didn't know the people. Wow, that's just a leap of faith. And here at Cedar Creek, the guy that had been here for at that time about 30 years was gone, and Doug and I were left to pastor the church. But God had put us in a position to do that, and that was an excellent, excellent 3 years. But going into it, there were a lot of unknowns. How in the world is this going to work? Dave's gone, and he's the old guy, and he's, you know, how are Doug and I going to work together? And boy, it's a good thing you're on staff, a good thing I'm on staff, so that we can do this.
And then a few years later, Dave came back in 2010. We planted the Cooley Rock Church, which is kind of a culmination of so many of these things, because so many of the folks that went to Cooley Rock got saved and built up at the Edge, which was a leap of faith years before. And the pastor that went down there was Doug Markowski, which was a leap of faith from years before. And so the point to this, guys, is we have seen this happen. This kind of stuff doesn't just happen in the Bible. It happens here. If we're willing to step out and to take a leap of faith. And when God says something, you know what, I want you to do this. And even if we can't see how it's going to work out, we say, all right, Lord, I'll do my part, and then you do what only you can do. God asks us to do that individually. He asks us to do it as a church. And we're in a lot like, I think, the Israelites there, when God was asking them to march around Jericho. They were a people in a unique position, and I think we are too. They were a people who were ready to have an impact on the world around them. I think we are too. They were a people who had strengths. I think we do too. They were a people who were willing to obey the Lord, and I think we are too. And I really think that we're in a position to take another leap of faith. And so what is that? What's the new leap of faith here at Cedar Creek? Well, it's this. This is what we think God's asking us to do. Expand our facilities to teach and reach young families, our own and those in the community. Expand our facilities so that we can teach and reach young families, our own young families, well, but new young families in the community. Is it going to work? Only if God makes it work. How is it going to work? I'm not 100% sure. Am I convinced that God can do something that only He can do? Absolutely. And yet, there's a part for us. And that's where this whole capital campaign thing comes into play. So guys, I would encourage you, if you haven't really thought through and prayed about, Lord, what would you have us give over and above, do so. Because again, just like all these other things, it costs people something. Sometimes money, sometimes relationships, sometimes labor. There's a part for us to play. This here is one of the parts for us to play. Will I give over and above so that we can fund this? If we do that, it puts us in a position where God has to come through. Or, you know what, we're in trouble. God, you have to come through here now. You have to raise the money. And then you have to come through by bringing people. You have to come through by changing hearts and lives. And we've seen God do it so often. And it's exciting for me to think, you know what, we can do this again. As individuals and as a church family, we can step out in faith, see what God does. And maybe 5 years from now, that list, it'll have this on there. 2017, expanded church. And look what God has done now about with that. Lord, I just pray that that's what would happen. Help us not to be afraid. Help us to be willing just to step out in faith when you ask us to do it, Lord. Help us to know what that looks like, to know what you're asking us to do, and then to have the courage to do it. Lord, we ask you to help us to do that.